God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer.
My administration will be focused on three very important words. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
This man must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And of course he'll have to be a genius, because he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up for safety. You are now entering another dimension with the Scott Adams Show.
That's right. My name is Scott Adams. You're listening to the Scott Adams Show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Well, we have a lot of different topics we're going to be covering today. We're going to cover election fraud. We're going to cover a little bit of climate. There's a lot of things that we need to be talking about. And one of which is President Trump. President Trump is turning he's making lemons out of lemonade, not a lemon. So he's going to trial in New York, and now every morning he's planning some sort of a gathering in some place in Manhattan. He's making a run to win over the hearts and minds, and why not? I mean, it's a unique opportunity, and that's the great thing about Trump, is he looks at every circumstance and figures out unique opportunities. This is a unique opportunity. And while Joe Biden is at a union rally yesterday, reading off of a prompter, saying, well, what we need is four more years, pause. So he says the word pause, which proves that the whole thing was scripted. So he's reading the four more years, and then he was supposed to just pause. And then the crowd was supposed to authentically and organically say, four more years, right? But he says, four more years, pause. And then you see right on cue, these people saying four more years, like as if they were told what to say. It's embarrassing. And then they had the nerve for immediate release to put out a Biden-Harris statement. It says, Biden campaign statement on Trump's campaign events today. The following is a statement from Biden-Harris 2024 spokesperson James Singer. He had none. So he had none is what. Now, I guess what happened was, Lawfare put this out, and a couple of people put this out, and I guess he didn't have any events on the day that they put this statement out, which was April 24th of 24. But Lawfare says Biden is gleefully issuing press releases, making light of the fact that Trump is unable to campaign because of their legal interference. Sick. So I'm not sure which one that was. Yeah. But they are using Lawfare, and people are upset about it. All the legal pundits are upset about it. And I'm not sure exactly which way that goes. What they're interpreting there is that Trump can't campaign, and they're laughing about it. it comes at a time when they actually have more proof that Biden knew about the Mar-a-Lago raid, because Justice Cannon, the person overseeing Jack Smith's case, unredacted information, and this unredaction of information is pretty telling and pretty amazing. So at first, Trump greeted with "We love Trump" chants during surprise early morning stop in Manhattan as union workers show support ahead of court appearance. So people are falling in love with Trump because it's authentic, because they see him as a martyr. They see him as a victim. And they know that this case has no merit whatsoever. You know, when we've played this over and over again, but to remind you that Trump, basically this was an accounting thing where they said legal expenses. And they were basically saying that those legal expenses should have been paid for by the campaign and public. But it was a personal matter, and Trump decided to pay it privately, the legal expense associated with the shakedown from a hooker and a call girl and a porn star. So it's stupid. But what you have is you have this trumped up into a criminal charge from something that didn't even have statute. And Trump will likely win on appeal, depends on where the appeals court is, but he'll appeal it because it would be hard to find a trial juror in Manhattan that supports Trump when there's only 12% Republican in that borough. But let's take a listen. We could take a quick listen to this "We Love Trump" chant. Everywhere Trump goes, he gets that kind of response. He gets that kind of greeting. Nobody shows up for anything related to Biden. All right, so getting to the important part, though. Unsealed docs expose early collaboration between archives, the NARA, right, and Biden White House in Trump prosecution. So just weeks after learning Joe Biden had improperly retained government documents, his administration began working with federal bureaucrats in spring and fall of 2021 to increase pressure on Donald Trump for similar issues and eventually prompt a criminal prosecution of the 45th president, according to government memos newly unsealed by a federal judge. So the correspondence released this week by U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon in Florida provide the most extensive accounting so far of how the Biden White House worked with federal bureaucrats to escalate pressure on Trump to return documents to the National Archives, even as it slow-walked similar issues involving its own boss. One email dated May 5th, 2021, shows the National Archives and Records Administration, NARA, had already consulted the Biden White House about missing Trump records more than a year before the public would learn that the former president had kept some classified memos. What's it called when President Biden attempts to lock up his leading political opponent before the election? Fascism? Communism? So, Judge Eileen Cannon has unredacted documents showing the Biden administration coordinated with the DOJ prior to the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago and during the prosecution of former President Donald Trump. So they have these documents unsealed. What was noteworthy is what they had sealed and what they had redacted, right? That was kind of telling. That they would, you know, because there was obvious what they were trying to hide. And so Julie Kelly. Julie Kelly is a investigative journalist that has been on this like white on rice. So let's take a listen to Julie Kelly.
So here's what really happened. You know, we were told the story. Donald Trump resisted NARA's attempts to get all these government documents. He asked what they were. This is the funniest part. NARA came back and said, well, we want the map of Hurricane Dorian. Remember Sharpie Gate? They actually said that map is government property. Then they said they wanted the letter that Barack Obama wrote to Donald Trump. Of course, this is a historical tradition. They said that that's government property. They wanted all of the record, any correspondence between the North Korean dictator as well.
Whoa, wait a second. You can go to, I was just at the Nixon Presidential Library. There's like thousands of letters from Nixon that are there, that are like physically there, right, in the Nixon Presidential Library. I've been to multiple presidential, JFK Presidential Library in Boston. Been to that one. I lived right next door to the Hoover, Herbert Hoover, not a super popular president, but like I lived very close to that presidential library. I was there all the time. They have all these documents, letters, every like all that stuff is there plastered on the wall. What's the difference here?
Well, this was just the ruse, Benny. This was what the archives were telling Donald Trump's team at the time, trying to recover what they said were government records. What it looked like based on this motion and other exhibits and correspondence is that NARA, the archivist, David Ferrero, was working with DOJ and the Biden White House to initially concoct a records destruction case. That's what it looks like. Because the archives were claiming, along with the Biden White House, the Office of Record Management, whatever it's called, that, oh, there are 25 boxes missing. We don't have an accounting for these. Then remember, Benny, and I posted this too. Remember in February of 2022, all of a sudden there were all these stories about how Donald Trump would rip up records in the White House. He was flushing papers down the toilet. That was New York Times, Maggie Haberman. This is the same time they are trying to concoct a records criminal investigation into Trump. So they were already using their media cutouts to help promote this idea that Donald Trump was irresponsible with government and presidential records, possibly national security files. So this is all, this is Russiagate, right? But this is on steroids because of, you know, how now we actually have a criminal trial and a criminal case against the president, two of them actually. So this is what is demonstrated. And again, I go back to this is why DOJ and Jack Smith wanted all of this information under seal, not made available to the American people, because it flies in the face of his own indictment, what they have told the American people as well as the media, and that this is a cover up for the Biden White House and possibly Joe Biden himself, deep involvement in concocting not just this criminal case, but of course the January 6th one as well.
So in
Wow, that's pretty incredible, right? I mean, that's a little bit of the backstory behind what's going on with this NARA case. All right. So Bragg had to do legal gymnastics to bring case forward for Trump's, and this is according to Trump's press secretary, about the case that's going on in New York.
President Trump remains defiant in the face of this witch hunt. And I will say it is such a shame to see the former president of the United States being prosecuted like a criminal in a criminal court here in New York City when there are real criminals running free in the streets. This is a case being brought by a Democrat prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, who has a clear vendetta against President Trump, overseen by a Democrat partisan judge who donated money to Joe Biden's campaign in a Democrat jurisdiction where they know it's nearly impossible for President Trump to get a fair and impartial jury. So it's despicable to watch this take place. And as the president just laid out, not only is this a witch hunt, it is also an unconstitutional violation of his First Amendment rights. It shows the disdain that the judge has for the president that he put this unconstitutional gag order on him. Not only are they prosecuting him, they don't even want him to speak about it. And it's terrible
to watch.
Well,
that's incredible, especially as you see Joe Biden traveling into all the swing states and attacking Trump. attacking right? MAGA Republicans. He's saying whatever he wants to say.
We are in the midst of a presidential election, and that's exactly why this case is coming. They have had 8 years to bring these alleged crimes, which aren't even crimes, by the way. President Trump did nothing wrong. Alvin Bragg and his team had to do legal gymnastics to even bring this case forward. It would have been thrown out of any other courtroom in America, but it's being brought here because Joe Biden, by the way, is behind all of this, and they are leading this election interference front to keep President Trump off of the campaign trail, confine him to a courtroom so he can't bring his winning message to voters across the country. But unfortunately for them, their strategy is backfiring. They underestimated the power of President Trump. He's an earned media machine. Everywhere he goes, the cameras follow him. He'll continue to speak out about this despite the gag order, and he'll continue to hit the campaign trail as hard as he always has.
Well, prosecutors are also alleging that Trump committed, quote, conspiracy to promote or prevent election, saying he tried to cover things up before the election by falsifying business records. Trump pled not guilty to all 34 counts against him. Caroline, earlier I mentioned the 2016 election and when Hillary Clinton paid for the dossier.
Right.
And she basically, her campaign called it legal expenses. Was that not exactly what they're trying to pin on Trump right now?
They are literally prosecuting the president with these alleged crimes, 34 felony counts, for paying his legal personal attorney and marking it as a legal expense. What else was he supposed to do? It was perfectly legal. They have manufactured and fabricated these charges 8 years later, again, because it's an effort to protect Joe Biden and weaken President Trump ahead of the next election. That's exactly what this case is. Legal scholars on both sides of the aisle agree with that. You brought up the point about Hillary Clinton. I'd like to bring up, how about Joe Biden, whose corrupt family set up 30 shell companies when he was vice president of the United States? He's become a multi-millionaire selling off his public access as vice president. And no trials for Biden because they're being led by him against President Trump.
Well, Hannah, what about that? Jump in here, because I think that if you are talking about the fact that it is an election year, shouldn't you be able to bring up both sides? I mean, you know, we've got the House Oversight Committee making some serious allegations against Joe Biden and his family. Money laundering, influence peddling. We're not allowed to talk about it. Nobody brings it up now, but they're all over Trump for something that Hillary Clinton, in fact, did in 2016.
Well, and they keep censoring people who try to talk about it, right? Kicking them offline, shutting it down. They don't even want to have the conversation. There should be investigations. And this is a common complaint I have about Republicans. They need to go on the offense at some point, right? I mean, Democrats, we know how they're going to play. We know how they're going to operate. At some point, you have to rise up and fight back. And I don't see that really happening. I do think that they're winning this round. But I also agree with Caroline. It is not playing in the public eye like they hoped it would. Mm-hmm. It really is backfiring against them. I think that's pretty plain and evident. And as somebody who hates the criminal justice system and thinks it's completely corrupt in this country, I love seeing it exposed for what it is.
We saw how much it backfired when President Trump went to a bodega in Harlem in New York City, a Democrat jurisdiction. And there were people, Harlem residents, outside of the bodega chanting, lying brag, because they know that their district attorney is a liar and he is corrupt. And he spends their tax dollars going after the former president of the United States who made the people in New York lives better. Yeah. He's spending all this time and money going after him, but not the real violent criminals in Harlem who are robbing bodegas, who are raping women, and who are killing innocent Americans.
Yeah, we have a bit of that when President Trump went to that bodega. Let's take a listen. The crowds chanting 4 more years outside the bodega. And then Joe Biden tried to copy that by going to a gas station. He didn't exactly get this kind of crowd. But Caroline, the Supreme Court will hear arguments tomorrow on whether Trump should be granted presidential immunity from special counsel Jack Smith's election interference investigation. What is your team expecting here?
Mm-hmm. Well, we expect that the Supreme Court will rule on the side of justice and the law. And all President Trump and his team are asking for is not just for him. They're asking for the protection for all future presidents of the United States, that they be granted immunity for official acts when they are president. And if presidents do not have this immunity, they will be prohibited from making official acts as president. They will be entitled to witch hunts by their political opposition and indictments like we're seeing right now. And so we hope the Supreme Court will rule not just in favor of President Trump, but all future presidents so that they can act in their official capacity as president to do what's best best for the United States of America. You have to have immunity. Our country will not function. And our founding fathers knew that. And that's why this is the first time in more than 200 years since our country's founding that the president of the United States is being prosecuted for official acts as president. And the Supreme Court must do the right thing to protect our democracy for the years to come.
Well, that will be one important ruling we'll be focused on. Carolyn, good to see you. Thank you.
So that's going to be happening today or tomorrow. I'm not sure. And that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because that'll just derail a lot of Biden's witch hunt trials. But nevertheless, Trump's still going to be stuck in court in New York for this Stormy Daniels hush money case. That's bringing us to the Supreme Court's been really busy, too, but then also the lawfare. So this is just this morning where President Trump was taking questions with reporters in New York before he goes into the courtroom. We can't make that out, but that brings us to the other point. The other point is that Arizona has launched a case. Arizona. And so this is getting to be a problem. So breaking, Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays, it's a woman, who won by like 280 votes in the election because of the election fraud in 2020. And she's elected because of the fraud that she's now defending. And basically she won't allow for any cases to look into the fraud that was going on in the 2020 Arizona election. Nevertheless, she announces that a grand jury has just indicted 18 Republicans, including Donald Trump, over alleged attempt to change the 2020 election's results. Let's take a listen.
Hi, I'm Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays. Let me start by thanking everyone for your patience as we conducted a thorough and professional investigation over the past 13 months into the fake elector scheme in our state. I understand for some of you today didn't come fast enough, and I know I'll be criticized by others for conducting this investigation at all. But as I have stated before and will say here again today, I will not allow American democracy to be undermined. It's too important. The investigators and attorneys assigned to this case took the necessary time to thoroughly piece together the details of the...
Never mind that you can indict a ham sandwich, right? It's a completely lopsided procedure, but let's go ahead.
...events that began nearly 4 years ago. They followed the facts where they led, and I'm very proud of the work they've done to date. We're here because justice demands an answer to the efforts that the defendants and other unindicted co-conspirators allegedly took to undermine the will of Arizona's voters during the 2020 presidential election. Arizona's election was free and fair. The people of Arizona elected President Biden. Unwilling to accept this fact, the defendants charged by the state grand jury allegedly schemed to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency. Whatever their reasoning was, the plot to violate the law must be answered for, and I was elected to uphold the law of this state. The scheme, had it succeeded, would have deprived Arizona's voters of their right to have their votes counted for their chosen president. It effectively would have made their right to vote meaningless.
None of that is true. What is true is that the illegals that are voting using the mail-in ballots, well, that is a real problem. So there's something that has happened today, or no, yesterday, related to that. And I'm going to find it. It's in Texas. And in Texas, they literally won a Supreme Court ruling, and Ken Paxton, the hero of Texas, the guy that can single-handedly save Texas, Ken Paxton, won a case. And let me just see if I could find this case. Doing my best, folks. So, right here. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, yesterday, he was reported, writes, SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, denied the Texas Democratic Party's effort to expand no-excuse mail-in ballots in Texas. This ends a years-long challenge in which we successfully defended the Texas law that limits voting by mail, and the law will remain in place. Many states irresponsibly and unconstitutionally changed their voting policies prior to the 2020 election. Fortunately, we did things differently in Texas. We fought hard to uphold Texas law and defend the integrity of elections in the state. We have worked tirelessly to keep our elections free and fair. There is nothing more important than protecting the integrity of every legal vote. All right, so that's kind of a big deal. So the Democrats arrogantly admitted the Time magazine article people seem to forget. We will not let this happen again. The shadow campaign of 2020. So he's referring to this. Their work touched every aspect of the election. They got states to change voting systems and laws and helped secure hundreds of millions in public and private funding. They fended off voter suppression lawsuits, recruited armies of poll workers, and got millions of people to vote by mail for the first time. They successfully pressured social media companies to take a harder line against disinformation and use data-driven strategies to fight viral smears. So, in any case, in Texas, they litigated a lot in order to prevent that from slipping into blue, like Georgia, because Georgia had a bunch of sellout Republicans at the top of their leadership, and they were in bed with China. Georgia did a lot of business with China, and they sold out America as a result of it. All right. Lots of different directions that we can go right now. Let's see. All right. So I covered the, we have this one story that we want to cover. Dr. Fauci is coming back. He's going to be appearing before the Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic. He will testify publicly for the first time since retiring from public service on Monday, June 3rd, 2024. He will undoubtedly be addressing a lot of very important questions. Why did Fauci overrule Eric Stemme in 2016, reinstating EcoHealth Alliance's funding for Wuhan lab work after it was pulled over gain-of-function violations? Why did Fauci privately sign a contract for $1 billion in mRNA doses on January 13, 2020, while he was publicly claiming the flu was a bigger threat than COVID? Why did Fauci pull down the initial COVID sequence that was posted by a Chinese scientist on December 28, 2019? Why did he pull that down? What was discussed on the October 31st, 2019 NIAID SARS-CoV-COVID call? A call that included EcoHealth Alliance's DAZAC, Ralph Barrick, and Limpha Wang. All three men were part of the Diffuse proposal, a blueprint for COVID. Why did Fauci make gain-of-function legal on January 9th, 2017? Why did Dr. Fauci have a secret back-channel conversation organized by Harvard at the request of China with Chinese CDC's Gao Fu, a.k.a. George Gao, to exchange information on the epidemic on February 4th. And finally, I hope you're better prepared this time and use Fauci's own emails and words as evidence against his public lies. So that was written by the committee. We have one more piece here. So Fauci's testimony will come in the wake of bombshell new emails from Echo Health Alliance's Peter Daszak and Fauci's aide that exposed the COVID gain-of-function cover-up. Daszak's email noted that the Wuhan lab was in possession of more than 15,000 samples of coronaviruses prior to the COVID pandemic. Echo Health Alliance was a cutout group for the Pentagon and National Institutes of Health. By the way, I was one of the first ones to ever admit that and say that. You can go back and go to my SoundCloud pages and Google Fauci gain of function and Fauci CIA and Fauci DOD. And you'll find articles from the beginning of the pandemic where I talked about Fauci's arrogance and I talked about Fauci being acting like he's untouchable, that Fauci was working covertly with the State Department, the CIA, the USAID, and the Department of Defense, and the Pentagon, and that he was, and I made comparisons to that, and that of Einstein and Oppenheimer, for that matter, with regard to the atomic bomb. There were scientists that were working on behalf of national defense in the name of patriotism. But was this gain-of-function patriotism? Was this cover-up patriotic? And I'm saying to you that there's a lot of stuff going on in Ukraine right now with gain-of-function research and biolabs and bioweapons, which COVID was one. And I think that in the case of Ukraine, there was a lot of swapping. Weapons would go to Ukraine. They would go down to the Middle East and find themselves in the hands of a mercenary group we like to call ISIS, a terror group, who was guarding our oil that was financing corporations and on the black market, competing with state-run government state-run Russian oil at a fraction of the costs, and it was a boondoggle, a win for everybody financially. So we were protecting ISIS, who was protecting Saddam Hussein's unprotected oil fields, keeping them out of the hands of Iran, and making a lot of corporations in Europe rich for cheaper energy as a competitor to the Nord Stream pipeline coming down from Russia into Europe, and also funneling that oil and that gas into Africa in exchange for gold, lithium, and pushing the Green New Deal. But in addition, there were weapons that were actually going to Ukraine, and they would find their way down to the Middle East. In exchange, they would also gather up all of the chemical weapons and bioweapons of mass destruction that they claimed they could not find. But they found them. They did find them. You know why I know that they found them? Because when Trump was about to pull out of Syria, and Lindsey Graham said, that would be the biggest mistake on the planet. And all of a sudden, so-called Russia, blame Russia, launches some sort of a weird chemical weapons attack in Syria. And why? If Trump is all ready to pull out of Syria and get out of the Middle East, why would Russia not want that to happen? It didn't make any sense that Russia then would engage in this bioweapon thing that keeps us there. And that never made any sense. And we talked about it at the time, and it never, ever did. And I was never, ever, my opinion on that had never changed, even today. And so there it was that you're dealing with this. And you're like, that does not make any sense. And Lindsey Graham got his way because he wanted to keep the money train flowing. So then what did Trump do? Trump bombarded. He got our military to bomb all these chemical weapon bioweapons that were surrounding in bunkers underneath the ground, surrounding the airport, because that's how they were shipping this stuff into Ukraine, who is managing this stuff. And Russia decided it was getting too risky for their own well-being. And Russia went into Ukraine and probably destroyed most of that stuff. But America can't admit it. And so it cost a lot of people a lot of money. And it put them out of business in Syria and the Middle East there for all that laundering. So what happened next? To keep the money flows and the money laundering going, they decided to allow a war to happen. They could have avoided the war. They could have avoided Russia invading. They had the Minsk agreement. They could have, but Boris Johnson said, no, we can't, we got to have war. And he poo-pooed the Minsk agreement. And what ended up happening is you ended up having this escalated war in Ukraine that was completely unnecessary. Could have been avoided. And was avoided in the Trump years, was never avoided in the when Russia invaded Georgia under Bush, when Russia invaded Crimea under Obama, when Russia invaded Ukraine under Biden. Nothing happened under Trump. Why? Because Trump would have not allowed it. He wasn't palm greasing. He wasn't doing kickbacks. He wasn't corrupt. And so the money started flowing into Ukraine in another way. And again, money goes into Ukraine with strings attached, and groups founded and owned by people like Anthony Blinken or Lloyd Austin, our defense secretary, are sitting on boards of these nonprofit NGOs and nonprofit think tanks. And they get millions, if not billions, of dollars that are required through the restrictions of the money that we give to Ukraine. We give them with strings attached that tell them that they must work with these groups, or they won't get the money. And then those groups are run by Anthony Blinken, Lloyd Austin, and all their cronies and all their family members in one way or the other, through subcontractors or contractors, direct or indirect. But at some point, the lobbyists march into Capitol Hill and they buy up politicians, either through campaign donations or foundation donations. In either way, the politicians are paid to play, pay to play. And that's how it works in Washington. So Echo Health Alliance was a cutout group for the Pentagon and National Institutes of Health and to fund risky and illegal gain of function research. Fauci is on record discrediting the man-made theory of SARS-CoV-2 publicly while working behind the scenes to suppress scientific dissent that the theory was plausible. The NIAID chief eventually pushed scientists at Science Magazine to call it a conspiracy theory while pushing the bat-wet market theory. The Department of Energy and FBI have published reports supporting the view that it is unlikely, that is likely that COVID was a man-made virus. So Dr. Ralph Barrick of the University of North Carolina developed the exact blueprint, RNA sequencing, furin cleavage site, for making SARS-CoV-2 prior to the virus being discovered near the Wuhan lab in China. One of the main arguments that Fauci and others make is that there is no published virus that could have been COVID or manipulated to become COVID. And that was explained by Rand Paul. And Rand Paul goes on and says, that may or may not be true, but the thing is that if there were 600 or 700 of these that are in the library or waiting to be sequenced, there's a possibility that COVID-19 was one of those, or something similar to COVID-19 was one of the viruses and was manipulated in the lab. So 700 unknown coronaviruses was noted by Daszak. It's important that as this information comes out, we find out all of the things that was known at the time. Now, you wonder why they did this, though. Did they do this to commit election fraud? Did they do this because no state that has mail-in balloting goes to a red candidate? Every state that does mail-in balloting and early voting, every single one of the states is blue. Now, you could say, well, that's because the blue legislature, it's a blue state, blue legislature likes these progressive election laws or rules. But I don't think it's that, because Colorado is a great example of a state that used to be red, then it became purple. And there's really not much reason for Colorado to slip into being an ultra blue state. I mean, look at Utah, look at Wyoming, look at all the states surrounding. Now, you got New Mexico, and that's infiltrated by a bunch of illegal migrants or immigrants. But look at Texas and look at Arizona. Arizona used to be Goldwater country, John McCain country, right? It was a red, reliably red state. But it's either the open border, which Democrats support, or it's the early and election fraud and election machine fraud and early voting and mail-in balloting. But recently, Trump won Arizona against Hillary. It was called late, but still, you know, what I'm saying is that this mail-in balloting always favors the Democrats. Early voting always favors the Democrats because of fraud. They're not waiting on ideas. Everybody knows that. Steve Miller writes, remember when the voting machines in Maricopa County, Arizona, malfunctioned in mass on Election Day, disenfranchising thousands of GOP voters? The Democrat AG that we just heard speak, who wants to indict 18 Republicans, including Donald Trump, using her grand jury, was declared winner. This AG was declared a winner by a margin of 280 votes. That's it. That's all. The same people winning these elections are pushing climate change. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that. I posted something. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about the IRS pushing AI, using AI. But I got this one thing I really want to cover, and that is this. There's a study that just came out, top study, carbon emissions cannot cause global warming. So forget about ESG, folks, right? So this was a new study that just came out. And it says a bombshell new peer-reviewed study has provided conclusive scientific evidence proving that carbon dioxide, CO2 emissions in Earth's atmosphere cannot cause global warming. A couple of things I'd like to say to that. They showed a time lapse of a Florida beach over the last, since like the 40s. And as a time lapse photography. And they put all the photographs together. And do you know that since the 40s, the shoreline hasn't changed a bit? Yeah, there were some buildings that went up alongside and some construction and some new roads. But when you look at the waterline and you look at the beach and you try to look at any kind of erosion in the last 80 years, there's not one iota of a difference. I mean, did they have to raise the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor because of flooding, because all the ice caps melting and raising the world's volume of water? No, they didn't. I mean, at some point, they're just lying to you. That was one study, but that was one thing. You can't lie. I mean, Plymouth Rock is still the same rock, and it's not underwater. Why? You know, when they show you Plymouth Rock, it's been there for hundreds of years. It's still there. And all of these bridges, some of these bridges that have been, you know, in place for over 100 years, the water level is exactly the same as it was 100 years ago. Photograph then, photograph now. How do you explain that, John Kerry? So this new study, it's a peer-reviewed study. Dr. Jan Kubicki led a group of world-renowned Polish scientists to study the impact of increases in CO2 emissions on the Earth's global temperatures. However, not only did they find that higher levels of CO2 made no difference, but they also proved that it simply isn't possible for increases in carbon dioxide to cause temperatures to rise, which is what I've been saying for years now, which is that temperature leads carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide doesn't raise temperatures. Carbon dioxide lags behind temperatures by 600 years or so, anywhere from 5 to 800 years. We'll just average it out and say about 600 years. So basically, temperatures are cyclical based on the sun and some other scientific reasons. But for the most part, that's what's going on there. So I wrote this. I said, great news. The climate crisis is over. We no longer need to worry about CO2 levels and can go back to using fossil fuels. Replace unwanted electric cars with combustible engine automobiles, reject ESG carbon taxes and the Paris Agreement, and ramp up Made in America manufacturing again. How great would that be? Do you think that they would ever embrace that? Do you think that they're ever going to say, hey, great news, we just realized that we were wrong, but that's okay. We're going to do away with the Paris Agreement. We're no longer going to put our energy into a meaningless environmental, we're going to try to keep the earth clean. We're going to try to reduce plastics and trash and stuff like that. Yeah, we're going to do that. But for the most part, we can go back to, gasoline-powered engines and gas stoves, and we don't have to worry about ESG taxes and environmental social governance scores and tracking your every move. And guess what? COVID was man-made. It was a leak. It's not a pandemic. We don't have to worry about any more pandemics because we're no longer going to do gain-of-function research. You know, we're going to ban bioweapons as a weapon of war. So therefore, no country should ever be engaged in this. And so therefore, it's unlawful to engage in bioweapons and genetic engineering and things like that. We're not going to clone humans and we're not going to do all this stuff. Great news. We don't have to have mail-in voting anymore because there's no threat of pandemics or COVID or any of these other things. Great news. We were lying to you about blacks not being able to get an ID We realize now the error of our ways as Democrats, and it was insulting to black people to accuse them of being so ignorant that they couldn't get an ID. And so it's starting to backlash on us. We're going to come clean. And we're just going to say that we're going to have paperless voting, and we're going to day of voting. We're going to declare a day of vacation. You're going to have a national holiday, which every election day, every presidential election day, every 4 years, we're going to have one official holiday. Every 4 years, one day. It's called Election Day. You're going to vote in your home precinct, and we're just going to go ahead and expand the number of precincts and poll workers. We'll get a bigger building if we have to. Instead of having two people and two poll booths, we're going to have 20 people and 20 poll booths if the lines are too long. I mean, that's how you address that, right? For anybody to say the lines are too long and it's too burdensome, then just increase the number of election officials that are and poll booths that you're going to put out for that one day. It's not like we can't afford it. We can afford to pay every illegal coming through, right? So it doesn't make any sense. They're lying to you. So this new study really does put an end to the whole argument, right? I would like to think so, but we'll see. All right, I did want to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court, and there is this Amy Coney Barrett part. Because yesterday I got to it at the very end, and I did want to talk about this homelessness case that they're hearing. And Amy Coney Barrett was on this as well. One of the things I think is that I wanted to say that I forgot to say because we rushed it yesterday was that I really think that the way you address homelessness isn't to ban, you know, the idea of it should be zoned where you can sleep and where you can eat. But like if you go to a food truck or if you go to the beach and fall asleep, just because you own a house and you're not homeless, you know, it's not fair for, you know, people, some people to be allowed to do that and other people not. But you have to have a certain level of hygiene, number one. And number two, you have to have, I think you have to have some performance benchmarks for cities. If you're a city like run by a Democrat and you have homelessness going through the roof, like in San Francisco or LA or other places, then you have to be held accountable. You have to pay a fine for that, like as a city, because you're not performing. And if you're underperforming as a city, part of the benchmark should be homelessness and how you handle it. But let's take a listen to this one little clip.
You're right. It's a very, very difficult policy question. And I asked you before about whether this was just about blankets or whether it went into having fires or urinating and defecating outdoors and that sort of thing. And Justice Sotomayor pointed out that this particular injunction did carve out those things and was just talking about sleep. But, you know, other cases have been litigated in the Ninth Circuit that have gone beyond that. And because the line is things that are involuntary, that are human needs, it can extend. It's difficult to draw the line. And whatever we decide here about this case is about the line. So can you describe for me some of the things that are difficult to figure out about the line? They're sleeping with blankets. What else?
Public urination and defecation, that is a serious problem. Those are parts of biological necessities of being human. A court in Sacramento addressed that, and the Ninth Circuit's opinions debated whether.
So we get it. Yeah, everybody's human. They have to do these things. You should have a right to do things, you know. But it's a very, very complex subject. I never knew how complex this subject was until I started listening to these cases from both sides and thinking, wow, my goodness, this is very complex. And I never thought about half of the stuff they were talking about. And so what I want to say is I think that the answer isn't about the Eighth Amendment or civil rights. It has to do with city governance and performance. And somehow cities with high homeless rates have to be held accountable for their performance and should be either fined or promoted for either doing a good job or doing a bad job. There needs to be consequences for the city government to have to answer to them. But that brings us to the end of the Scott Adams Show. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Be sure to check out MAGAPAC.org. Find out how we're advancing America First policies to make America great again. Also, make a donation if you'd like to continue to hear the Scott Adams Show commercial free. Use Red State as your promo code over at MyPillow.com. And with that, we'll see you next time.
Grab a shovel, dig a hole a little deeper, just to bury my kids right up to there.